Today is the 5th of October, 1985. I am Don Machado, Chairman of the Historical Committee of the Otwicka Canoe Club, and I have the pleasure of interviewing Fred Hemmings, Jr.
Fred, would you tell me where you were born and when you were born and where you were raised?
I was born on January 29th, 1946, here in Honolulu at Kapi'olani Maternity Hospital. I was raised in Honolulu, lived my entire life as a resident of the state of Hawaii in Honolulu.
Where in Honolulu did you live? In what neighborhoods?
Well, believe it or not, originally when I was a young boy, I lived in Kahala when it was pig farms, flower farms. The only paved roads when I was a youth were Kahala Avenue, Kealaolu, and Farmers Road was just that, a Farmers Road. And I lived at 4746 Farmers Road on a two-acre lot leased from Bishop Estate by my grandfather. And back then, Farmers Road was just that, a Farmers Road. It's changed a lot.
Well, I can remember that I lived in the Lower Manoa area, and we'd go out to get eggs every Saturday to a farm out there.
Right.
My mother would say we're going out to the country to pick up eggs. Tell me about your family background, your mother and your father, where the family originally.
When they my mother was Lillian Bernice Freitas. This is her maiden name. And she was fourth generation Portuguese. Her family arrived in 1883 on the seventh voyage of the Portuguese ships from Portugal, from Madeira specifically.
And about what year was that?
1883.
Hmm.
My mother's great-grandmother came from Madeira in 1883. And soon after, in 1887, my grandfather's family came to Hawaii. Both of were sailing from the Madeira Islands in Portugal. So my Portuguese ancestry on my mother's side goes back to 1883, which makes me fifth generation on my mother's side. My father's mother and father came from New York City when my father was a five-year-old young boy. And my grandfather on my father's side was with the Navy and was out in Hawaii with the first airplane detail that was coming out to be stationed at Pearl Harbor. And my father's family history goes back to New York, where he was of English and Irish predominantly, with a French and Indian ancestry on the East Coast.
And so they arrived when in the islands?
My father arrived in the islands with his mother and father and his sister, I think it was 1920, 1921. My father attended eventually Roosevelt High School and played football there, and went on and did a tenure at the University of Hawaii. And my mother, of course, as all young Portuguese ladies, was a graduate of Sacred Hearts Academy.
Well, Fred, tell me, you mentioned that your dad went to Roosevelt. Now, where did you go to high school?
I started my educational career at Star of the City school right near the Kahala area, back when the school was in the church was in an old barn and there were old wooden structures there at the juncture of what now is Kilauea and Wailea.
The old Japanese school, wasn't
right.
it? Yeah, I remember that. And we used to go to church there too.
And then Star of the City eventually moved to new facilities where they are now. I went to fifth grade to Star of the City, and then I went to Punahou, and I graduated from Punahou in 1965. And I attended a semester at the University of Hawaii and decided that I was going to get an education in life, practical education. I went into my own business and started my surfing career and never did go back to college.
Now, when you were at Punahou, did you play sports at Punahou? Mm-hmm.
I was, living in the Kahala area in East Honolulu, I spent the days of my youth on the beach at Waikiki, so I got involved as a very young boy in both canoe paddling and surfing. And then when I went to Punahou, I, also got involved in football. My major sport in school was football, and I eventually played on the all the eighth grade team, the junior varsity football team, and then eventually played varsity football for Pono. I'm very proud of the fact that in 1964 we had a team that won the ILH football championship for Pono. And I'm proud of it because throughout the century, this century, Pono maybe had five or six champion teams, and I was lucky enough to be on one of the championship football teams at Pono.
What position did you play?
On offense, I played offensive center, and I centered the ball to what I considered one of Hawaii's all-time greatest football players, a young man named Charlie Wiedemeyer. And on defense, I played, he was our quarterback, Charlie Wiedemeyer. On defense, I played left linebacker.
Now, you, of course, everybody really thinks of you as being the top surfer of the islands. Now, how did you become interested in surfing, and do you have any teachers or models that...
I have very vivid memories of growing up in Hawaii, and as early as I can recall, I was on the beach at Waikiki, and I can remember the old koa canoes. I can remember the old Outrigger Canoe Club and the boys' locker room and going into the big person's locker room with my dad. And my dad, in his youth, he lived Paula Lane down by the Hawaiian Village, and when it was back in those days, the residential area.
Yeah, which lane was that again?
Paola. Yeah, it's not Paola. I forgot the name of it, but the Paola family had land down there. Maybe it is Paola Lane.
Like Paola Valley?
That's the same lane? Mm-hmm. But my dad joined the Outrigger when he was a very young boy.
About what year?
Well, I'd say he joined the Outrigger maybe when in 1925, 26, when he was 10, 11 years old. And he of course surfed and he paddled. And he's got pictures of himself from the Junior Forge State Championship team, and he still has a paddle that they used in a race in Hilo back in the 30s. And so it was only natural that he brought me to the Outrigger as early as I can remember. And I can especially remember he was always worried about all of us kids in the water, and he used to have a little plastic floater that was like a football that you tied around your waist, and I used to have to wear it. It was really embarrassing. I guess I was about 5 or 6 years old, and it was like a little football strapped to the back of your back, and I was all embarrassed about it. But when I was 8 years old, I used to play in the surf down by what they called back then Babies, which is in front of the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. And when I was 8 years old, he finally got my first surfboard, which was an old hollow board that someone gave him. And because he was always worried about us in the ocean, he painted it orange. So I had this big orange hollow surfboard. It was my first surfboard. And that was 1954.
That's a good dad.
And then grew up surfing. I was restricted to baby surf when I was 8, and I'd sneak out to canoes. And there was a real pecking order that I always remembered about surfing. The old-timers used to sit outside on the big long boards, and they'd catch a wave, and they'd come sliding left through the blowhole area, and they'd say, coming down. And if the kids didn't get out of the way, they'd get run over and disciplined. Looking back on it now, I find it is refreshing that there was a more orderly, disciplined environment, because sometimes things get pretty hectic now, people stepping all over each other, and it doesn't seem to be any for the older people who more or less paid their dues. Eventually, I just started to compete in surfing, and I competed in my first Macau International Surfing Championship in 1958. I was 12 years old, and I think got third or fourth place as a junior then. My surfing career blossomed, and I competed as an amateur in many events. Eventually, it's culminated with winning the World Surfing Championship, which was an amateur title. I won that in 1968. That was in Puerto Rico, the World Surfing Championship. And in my surfing career, I had the opportunity to travel to Tahiti to surf, and of course, California and Texas and the East Coast, and made frequent trips to Peru, and have made very strong friendships in Peru that are still enduring to this day. Incidentally, Peru is a fascinating place, and the Club Waikiki in Peru is actually patterned after the Outer Canoe Club, because the fellow that founded Club Waikiki on the outskirts of Lima, the place called Miraflores, came to Hawaii in 1941, which was before I was born, and saw the outrigger and went back and started a surfing club and introduced surfing in Peru and started a club exactly like the outrigger called Club Waikiki in Lima. His name was Carlos Donier, and he is, to this day, is still alive and still surfing.
How would you spell Donier?
Carlos Donier is D-O-G-N-Y. And in the course of, I first went to Peru in my junior year of high school and went subsequently three or four times and have returned since the 60s on two occasions. And there's some very wonderful people down there that tremendous similarities between the clubs, the Club Waikiki in Lima and the Albert New Club. And there's a very strong bond amongst the people who have traveled to Peru because they're wonderful folks. It's coincidental that surfing is a common tie between the two peoples.
Now, are most of the members Peruvians? Yes. An international
No, it's very much a Peruvian club. It's it's just like the outrigger. It's the, down in that country, it's mostly the aristocracy and the more affluent business people of the country, and this is their beach club, and they spend their time in afternoons playing paleta, which is a netball game rather than volleyball. They paddle and surf, and it's very much a dining and social club also.
How is the beach and the surfing? Is it similar?
The surfing, surfing in Peru, they have some absolutely exquisite surfing sites, but at this particular location in Lima, so it's the bottom of cliffs, very much similar to Santa Monica cliffs in California. The land falls off of maybe 100 feet on a cliff, and it's built at the bottom of these cliffs, like the Santa Monica Beach Club. But rather than having a beach, they have a Imusai stone type of beach, and the water washes up in stones. And I'll never forget, because in Peru, as a young boy, I was very impressed by the poverty. When you go there, you don't see the overt poverty in the United States that you see there. I mean, you do see some poor people nowadays, but you don't see thousands of people living in shacks. And I'll never forget that they had beach boys at Club Waikiki in Lima that when the surfers run up, they just stand on the beach and run up and down and catch the surfers' boards and take them back out to them. And I thought, geez, how extravagant, having beach boys paddle your boards back out to you.
Like golf caddies.
Yeah, exactly. It was like surf caddies, and it was really amazing.
Well, you won the Peruvian International Surfing Championship in 1964?
Right, that's my first trip, right.
That must have been exciting.
It really was. I traveled to, in fact, Klein Mann, the president of the outrigger, I went on behalf of Hawaii to compete in their international events. And I was hosted as a guest of Club Waikiki, and I represent the outrigger. And Klein Mann was the president of the outrigger then, and he took me to the outrigger and shook my hand and sent me on my way. I was a junior in high school and went to Lima. And back then, of course, we were traveling with 10, 11-foot long surfboards, and I took two surfboards, one for the real big waves, and then a second surfboard for the what we call hot dog surfing and smaller wave surfing. And I was greeted in Lima by the people there and hosted to about a week of just a wonderful time. And we had a series of surfing contests. They had two at Club Waikiki where the small surf is, and then they about a 40-minute ride out of Lima in a southerly direction is another coastal town where they have another little club facility called Quantiki. And in the bay there, Punta Hermosa, is a rather nice surf that they call Quantiki surf, and it got to about 10, 12 feet.
Punta Hermosa, P-U-N-T-I-H-E-R.
P-U-N-T-A, Hermosa, H-E-R-M-O-S-A.
Yes.
Beautiful point.
Right.
But it's a nice little beach and a little town. Punta Hermosa is a little town. And then out on the other side of the point, I went back there in 66 for the World Surfing Championships, and they had found another surf that they call Punta Rocas, Rocky Point, and that's where the even bigger waves are. That's what she would have had. But surfing is flourishing in Peru, and the Peruvian surfing history traces its roots right back to the outer canoe club through Carlos Donier.
An enticement. I'm sure it's a reciprocal club to go out there. And,
oh, yes. In fact, I'm quite proud of the Outer Canoe Club because there really is a special relationship between Club Waikiki and Lima and the outrigger that goes beyond just a reciprocal club. And every time we have a guest from Peru here, we go out of our way to host a little get-together, a cocktail party, because they are special people. And anytime anyone in the outrigger is in Peru, if they go to Club Waikiki, I will guarantee they will be warmly welcomed and hosted.
I wonder if you could tell me about some of your earliest recollections of the outrigger canoe club. You said that you would come down to the club with your dad. And about when would that be? How old would you have been?
As early as I can remember, we were briefly in Mesa Field in California because my dad was in the Air Force. But as early as 53, 54, I was 5 or 6 years old, and I can remember vividly the Outer Canoe Club, the old club, walking in, and the old desk, Malia, I don't know if you remember Malia or not, that she would be there. Then, of course, Eva Pomeroy was there, and Charles, he on the right side of the lobby had his accounting department there, and then right behind the reception desk was the manager's little office. In the men's locker room, you'd get your key there, and the old switchboard that Eva and Malia would be manning, and they'd give you your key, and you'd walk down in the men's locker room on the left. And right outside the lobby area, the club would open up into a large area where there was a grass sitting area, and they eventually built a little hut in the back of the grass area for all the kids to hang around. I guess they figured they'd keep them out of the way by keeping them in the hut, a little canvas-covered structure. In the volleyball courts, of course, were very prominent in that area. In the old snack bar, and I remember the very exotic Richard Oda was the king of the snack bar. And then the old wooden surfboard lockers. And since I'm still interested in surfing and still partially involved in it, I would have now, looking back in retrospect, given quite a lot to have some of the old boards. There was some real history in those lockers as far as old surfboards go. And the upstairs was, of course, the dining area and the kitchen. And the outrigger back then was, looking back on it now, was extremely functional in its design. I had the dining area on the second floor, and the Howe Terrace was off in the corner of the club. But under the dining area and right on the beach was a whole, the ground floor was accessible to the beach. And that's where the workshops were, and that's where the canoes were stored. And so the club was very functionally designed in the sense of the word that all your athletic and water sports equipment were there on the beach. The beach frontage was devoted toward the water sports. And the dining room was upstairs, and of course the volleyball and the drinking or Howe Terrace area were in the corner or in the internal club. So it was a very functional design. I'm sorry that we lost that function design in this club, because the beach frontage now is all social drinking and dining. And it seems ironic that the surfboards and the canoes are kept out by the street. And you have to walk through the social area to get the water sports equipment to the water. And it's an inconvenience to the social people, and it's certainly difficult for the sportsmen.
Different philosophy, right?
I don't know. Yeah. It's just the way that this place was designed. But I think over the years we can make the adjustments here at this site to improve that. Nevertheless, my memories of the outrigger, the old outrigger at the old site before we moved in 1963, go back to me being a very small boy and actually growing up there. And of course, we had, as kids, you have little things you do as clubs and little places you hang out. And we had sometimes we put a little rope up between the surfboard lockers and play volleyball between the surfboard lockers, because we were the real small kids and we couldn't get out of a baby court. And we had, of course, our baby volleyball court that we used to play on. And And we used to hang around right outside. The club was where the most of the Pui Nolo gang used to hang out. There was a hau tree. We used to sit out there and talk about surfing and all of those things. And when I was 10 years old, my grandmother, Tutu Bessie, my father's mother, as a birthday present, bought me my membership, or applied me and paid for my first membership, which was $36. And I was so proud that I had my little card and I was a member of the Outrigger Canoe Club.
Well, this would have been what?
1956.
56.
Right. Mm-hmm. January 56, and I became a member then. And so that that gives me, I'm on my 29th, close to my 30th year of membership at the Outrigger.
You're a senior member, except in age at this
point.
Yeah,
I'm only 39 years old. I feel pretty senior. Yeah.
Well, what about some of the favorite people, you know, that you remember that were your models, people that helped you and people that you enjoyed?
You know, it's really funny. I was always extremely impressed by some of the more Hawaiian members of Yacht Rigging. I could never figure out why. But it's funny now, even to this day, it's almost like a predestiny. I'm terribly fascinated, and actually my hobby is Hawaiian history and Hawaiianiana, and I'm constantly seeking out antiquity, and I've read most of the Hawaiian history books. And as a young boy, without ever realizing this would eventually happen, I was very enamored almost by Duke Hanamoku, his regal way he carried himself, his sense of dignity and sense of worth and confidence. And I sure wish that the modern Hawaiians that sometimes we hear about in some of these trouble areas would have a little more of that self-confidence and dignity. Because I'll never forget, too, when I was a young boy, there was a man who used to come out once or twice, and he used to wear, of course, we always had those amni'i trunks, and we always had surfing trunks and stuff, and this man would come out in more or less tank trunks, which were very brief, and they were always black, and it was Reverend Akaka, and he'd surf all the time too. Then of course I'm really glad that I do remember, as a young man, I never knew them personally, but I knew them to say hi, and they knew me, all the old classic Beach Boys, which is an epic part of Waikiki's history. Panama, Chick, all of those guys, and they all worked at the Outrigger Beach Service. And those people were characters beyond description. And their lives and their contribution and their role in the Outrigger's history and Waikiki's history is, major. But then I can remember some of the older dignitaries of the Outrigger and board of directors and people like that.
Who were some of these people? Did you name them?
Well, people I remember, R.Q. Smith was when I was a young boy, was a president, and he had the club luau. I remember that part of my job was to carry around some of the food, and I served R.Q. Smith and his guests. I go, oh, great, I'm serving the president of the club. And of course, I remember H. Fitz and Danford. Back then, Klein Mann was younger, but he was starting to become more prominent in the club history and transactions. And I remember the club had hired a guy named Ted McGill as the manager, and Ted McGill was always, he was always bossing the kids around. He always found something wrong with the kids, and the kids have that impression, the manager's the strict teacher kind of thing. And, of course, back when I was a young kid, there were a lot of great Ronnie Sorrell, Cross, Billy Cross, Pat Wyman, and all of those. Tommy Hain were all the top-notch volleyball players. I never was much of a volleyball player, but I remember they were some of the athletic heroes. And then, of course, we had a whole surfing gang and a great number of surfers, and of course that whole volleyball gang also surfed a lot. That generation, when I was a young boy, and my 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, those were the prominent athletes in the club.
Did you spend a lot of time at the Outrigger? Was the Outrigger a place you came to?
Well, I lived in Kahala, and then eventually the family moved to Kuleo'o, then Kaimuki. I think that I spend a good portion of my weekend time here at the club. My parents were fairly strict, so during the week we went out to the beach. We'd come home from school and do yard work and do our studies and things like that.
And that dad sounds like a wonderful dad. Painting. What was he painted? Surfboard. What color?
He painted it orange. So in case I got lost at sea or something, they'd be able to sight me. I'll never forget. I had this big orange hollow board, which I got when I was 8 years old.
You'd appreciate this story. This woman is from England, you know, but she says her son has taken up surfing. I think he's about 12 or so. And she says she used to play tennis. Now she sits on the beach and watches him, mm-hmm. just to be sure he's okay.
Right.
So I think you're going to appreciate that.
I come from a big family, and my older brother and sister were also canoe paddlers and surfers, and eventually my whole family got involved in canoe paddling.
How many brothers and sisters
I have five brothers and sisters. My oldest sister is Cynthia, and she was a champion surfer at Makaha. My older brother, Mark, likewise, was a very successful surfer and canoe paddler. And then my younger sister, Maria, did a little bit of surfing, and she also did some canoe paddling steering. My younger brother, Aka, is very active in, he's more of the adventurer in the family, and he goes off on adventures. He's ridden some 20-foot waves in North Shore in a canoe, and right now he's steering the Outriggers first team in the Molokai race. And I have a younger sister, Heidi, who's also been a paddler and a surfer. So we all have a surfing, canoe paddling background. What's interesting in my surfing is I grew up with it and was relatively successful competing, and then I parlayed my interest in surfing into some business interests also. I developed professional surfing and also put together the surfing events that are covered by television. One time I had events on all three networks, so part of it in the business also.
I think we've all seen you on television, and you do a good job.
Thank you. Mm.
Do you have any favorite recollections, you know, any memories that you particularly recall, you know, the Outrigger, you know, with
I think the lifestyle and the pleasure of those days and just some general things. I really relish certain things and environments that were just pure pleasure. One of them was a surf site called Number Threes, which is outside the Reef Hotel. It was kind of the Outrigger's break. We all paddled out there, and we very seldom, because things weren't that crowded back then, we very seldom see surfers from anywhere else. It was kind of a territorial thing. And, I spent countless hours surfing at a spot called Number Threes. It was really a classic break. And that was very special. I can also remember sometimes we'd get permission, or sometimes as young boys you tell your parents you're going to spend the night somewhere. You're 13 or 14 years old, and we used to sneak down and sleep under the canoes at the Outrigger, and then get up real early and go surfing before the sun came up. So I can remember doing that. In fact, this is a funny story. My mother was always a very staunch Catholic, and so on Sundays I'd have to go to church, and occasionally I'd have to drag some of my non-Catholic friends to church before we'd be surfing. So I can vividly remember a couple of times being in church.
You didn't convert any of them?
No, never did convert them. I was worried they'd convert me, which they, that's another story. But I remember Number Threes, and I remember. I also remember all the canoes, and back then I never realized how priceless they were, because all the canoes in front of the Outrigger back then, because it was before fiberglass, were koa. Now, of course, a koa canoe is a very priceless thing.
Where are these canoes now?
Exactly. Yeah. They have gone into history now. And I can remember that basically the Outrigger Canoe Club is a lifestyle, I think, for we members of the club. It's a very treasured lifestyle, because it affords us a family environment. Just the other day, we came in from paddling, and a lot of the paddlers have young kids, and even the men go out of their way to more or less take care of each other's kids. So it's a very healthy family environment to that extent. But it also is an extremely healthy lifestyle as far as, you know, I'm 40 years old and pretty active in business and politics. But I think that I owe my physical health to this lifestyle. Mm. And this lifestyle is a result of the outrigger. Jogging and surfing. I don't surf that much anymore, but I surf, paddle. I'm paddling this year in the Molokai race. The old outrigger and the new outrigger are exactly the same. I think it was the same for the men who founded it in 1908. They were interested in the lifestyle, and they wanted a place to perpetuate that lifestyle. And the men and women of the outrigger to this day are still enjoying the lifestyle that's offered to us by the surf and the sun and the sea and the games we play.
I think you really hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think it's a wholesome environment and a family-oriented.